I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Jim M. from San Diego.
Hi, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 17, 1992. My sponsor is Bob B. My home group is Harmony Group in OB, and if you're ever there at 6:45 in the morning, the coffee's hot and the doors are open. We're open Monday through Saturday. My service position is I'm outgoing chair of the Coordinating Council for San Diego Central Office. I say that not to brag. I say that because of this thing right here, that circle and triangle. When I first came into this program, I was told that if I do those things, recovery, the steps, unity, the traditions, service position, that you'll stick around. And I have found that so for myself. I have a yet. My yet is I've never changed my sobriety date. Yeah. That doesn't mean it can't be, but by doing those things, that has worked now for quite a while, and I continue to do them. I really could shorten my whole thing because the first speaker told pretty much my early story. You know, I started drinking when I was about 12, 13. I remember the first time I really got bombed. I was in junior high school, and I was in class, and I got this bright idea to cut class, and I cut out of class, and I'm from New York, so if you're tall enough that they can see you over the counter, they'll sell you booze. And I went into this place, and they had a big special on this thing called Bock beer. It was one near the holiday times, and they were making this special beer. And I bought a quart of it, took it outside, went around the corner, took the lid off, threw it away, and chugged this thing down. And a half an hour later, I was spinning, I was puking, I was stupid, you know. Tried to lay down and make the world go away and couldn't, and got up and decided, well, I probably should go back to school. And these are the bright ideas that alcoholics have. Yeah. And so I went to school, and naturally they called my parents and came and got me, and you know, everybody gave me a stern talking to, and I was really so sick I didn't give a shit what anybody said. I just wanted to lay down and go to sleep. And the next day when I woke up, I got this great idea. That wasn't so bad. I'd like to do it again. And I didn't realize that at that moment, I was doing what they talked about in Chapter 3. I started a life of self-delusion. Here I had all this trouble on the other hand, and I'm thinking, it ain't so bad. You know? And so I continued drinking, had periods, you know, of drinking okay and then getting into trouble and drinking okay, getting in trouble. I naturally gravitated towards the wrong people. I got a job working in Coney Island emptying pinball machines. And the guy that I was working with, we would skim off, you know, the quarters and fill our own pockets and then take the rest of the money to the guys that the business there. And after a couple of months, my dad came in to me one day, and he noticed that my closet, I had, you know, was hanging nice clothes. I was buying nice clothes and hanging them in my closet. And he said, James, where are you getting all this money? And I said, well, you know, this and that. And he said, well, what do you mean this and that? What? And so I explained it to him. And he looked at me. He said, James, you realize you're stealing from the mob? And I went, So I quit that job. And, you know, that's the way my life went. Just about as I was about to go down with the sinking ship, I ran away. You know, which was not good because it started a life of also running away. You know? And I went to work in another place, and this was a good job. I wasn't in any trouble, but it was still mob-affiliated. And there was me and another 17-year-old kid working behind the counter making sodas and stuff. And there was a problem between the grown-ups, the owner and his people, and money was missing. And one of the other guys took the other kid downstairs and blew him away with a shotgun. you know. And the next day I realized, you know, just by the grace of God, that was not me. So I said goodbye to that job, and I went and joined the Navy and got out of town. You know, that was the only way that I was ever going to straighten myself out is, or get away from it, is get out of town. And I joined the Navy, and I did well, like most alcoholics. You know, you give me something to do, and I will do the hell out of it. And then as soon as I go do the hell out of it, then I get bored, and I start looking for a drink. You know, I've got this A personality in me that when I've got a task, I really go for it. But as soon as I get it done, it's, you know, no fun. So I was lucky enough, I joined the Navy and was on submarines, went to submarine school, and they have a thing in submarine school. You can fail one test, and then after that, you're out. And so naturally, I failed the first test. Yeah. And then I bore down and graduated. There was, actually it was pretty good. There was 1,200 people that went to submarine school through my class. There was 374 of us that graduated. I was 356, you know. So I was never a star, but I could do the work, you know. And had a ball, you know, came to San Diego and would do well and then get busted. Do well, get busted. You know, and when I came here, I decided to do well again and straighten myself out, you know, cut down on the booze, you know, just try to do a good job. And it worked out, you know, and I rose in rank and I met a wonderful lady and we got married and you know, everything was going good and then I started drinking again, and, you know, everything started going to hell again. And so I got out of the Navy, and about 2 years later after I got out of the Navy, I was hanging around in this one bar in Ocean Beach, and my wife showed up, and I hadn't been home in probably a few days, and I hadn't really been home in about 8 or 9 months. So, you know, I would go to the bar after work and then go home after the bar, which meant, you know, maybe, if, sometimes. And she came in and she said to me, she said, you know, this is it. She said, you're either going to be in the bar here or you're coming home. And my next thought was, wow, I got to get rid of the bitch. And as I'm thinking that, I'm telling her, oh, sweetheart, I'll be home. Oh, sweetheart, you know, I want to run away. And so I tell you anything you want at the moment, but as soon as you're gone, you know. And that particular point I talk about, because from then on in my drinking career, something that had never happened to me before in my drinking career happened. I started drinking with guilt. I'd never had guilt. I had done a bunch of shit. But it didn't matter. I never had guilt. And from that point on, I had guilt. And so I never knew whether I was going to be a happy drunk or a sad drunk or a mad drunk or this kind of drunk. Before that, I was just a drunk. You know. And it started to bring out something about so important that 12 and 12 pushes it so big, emotions. Emotions started to roll. You know, and I couldn't stop them. I could stop them when I was sober. I could be very stoic and all of this. But as soon as you put a drink in me, you never know who you're going to see. You know. And, you know, my life went on and up and down. It went down for quite a while after that. And then I got lucky enough, because I'm a vet, I got a good job. And I became an electrician for the San Diego Unified. And met another lady and married, and we had two beautiful sons, and then, you know, the world started to come crashing down again, and she kicked me out because she couldn't handle, you know, my alcoholism anymore. And I kept going like that until I was 48, and then at 48, I had already spent 2 summers prior to that living in Balboa Park, and once again I was in Balboa Park, and I was going over to the Vietnam Vet Center over on 6th Avenue, and I went over there one day, and the people in the Vietnam said, you know, we're tired of you. You don't want help. So go somewhere else. They said, the Salvation Army is open Monday morning. Why don't you go down there? And, Monday morning came around, and I guess because I just had nothing else, that was it. I went to the Salvation Army and went in for the interview, and for the first time in so many years, when they started talking to me, I told the truth. I told them who I was. I told them what I thought of myself. And they said, okay, we'll give you a bed, And I stayed in the Salvation Army for 8.5 months. Like many alcoholics, the week after I was there and I had gotten a shave and new clothes and all this other stuff, and I was, you had to get your court slip signed, so I was going to meetings, and if you asked me in the meeting, I would tell you I was never going to drink again, man. I had it. I'm 4 days sober. I haven't been 4 days sober in years, man. And then I was 2 weeks sober, and I'm singing the praises. And then about day 28 or 29, I was finishing dinner, and I got this overwhelming urge to put some brandy in my coffee. And I got up, and I started walking out of the place. And luckily, as I was going out, there was one of the counselors was standing by one of the doors, and he looked at me, and he must have saw something on my face. He said, Jim, where are you going? And I said, I'm going out. And he said, no, where are you going? I said, actually, I'm probably going to get some brandy. And he said, why? What's going on? And I said, I'm thirsty. And he said, come on, let's talk about this. And he talked me out of it, talked me down, And that next day, all of a sudden it hit me, what alcoholism was, It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, And so I settled down into going to meetings with this small group of guys who were all assholes. And we stood at the back of the room, and we looked at the girl's ass, and we made fun of the speaker, And that went on for another couple of weeks, I was leaving one night. The group left before me, and I was leaving one night to go to that meeting that we usually went to at the YWCA. And another fella that was in there that had, the guy must have relapsed 20, 30 times. He was back again, and he was trying again. And he said, where are you going? I said, I'm going. He said, why don't you come with me? He said, there's a really good meeting that I go to on Saturday night up at Pathfinder's. And he said, it's not a Pathfinder's meeting. It's an open meeting, but. So what the heck. So I went with him. And that night there were three people up there taking cake, counting 75 years of sobriety. All three of them had 25 years. And I just, wow. And one of them was an electrician. And that hit home. And they all three said the same thing. The reason we have 25 years is we haven't drank and we don't die. And then they said, we do the steps. We read the book. And we work with a sponsor. And I thought, I'm pretty much brain dead, but I can do three things. And that meeting turned my life around. I started to participate after that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to go into meetings regular. I started to sit closer to the front. I started listening instead of judging what people were saying in my head. I got out of the Salvation Army, and I had already planned where I wanted to live. I moved to Ocean Beach, which is where I wanted to live, and I had scouted out some meetings, and I found a new meeting that was really good for me, and I started going to that, and the people in there, they carried me. They started taking me through the steps. So when I came in, how you doing? How you really doing? They wanted to know how I was feeling inside, not just what I was saying. And they through their lifestyles, they showed me how to, live a better life, And it was, okay, I don't want to do that. I won't do that. I can remember I got a sponsor, started working with them, and I was going to these meetings, and I would look around the room, and I like you. Well, I don't like you, so when you speak, I sing songs in my head so I don't have to listen to you. Sounded like a good idea to me. And then one day I made a mistake of telling this man that I called sponsor what I was doing. And he looked at me and I went, oops. And he said, we need to revisit step two. He said, why would voluntarily go someplace and then do something like that? He said, that's insanity. And so I started to learn through experience what the steps meant to me. And I was going there, you know, I got a regular job, and so I couldn't go to that noon meeting anymore, and I was doing well. I was going to some other meetings, and as I was going, I was cutting back and cutting back and cutting back, and I was going to like two meetings a week, and you know, I thought I was fine. Home group had a phone commitment, so I was going once a month to the phone commitment, so heck, I'm doing, you know, I'm going to two meetings a week, and I'm doing service. I'm going to be sober forever, you know. And after about a month, I started acting out, you know. And luckily, the sponsor said something to me, you know. He said, you know, and he said, what are you doing different? That's what he said. And I said, well, I was going to six meetings a week, and I was participating, you know. And he said, okay. Go back to it, you know. So I found this home group Harmony. It was only about six or eight blocks from my house. And I started going to this. And this was not just an AA meeting. This is a group, you know, like similar to what you guys have here. You know, people interacted. People cared. They don't just say, how you doing? You know, how are you really doing? You know, and we helped each other. For some reason, I started sponsoring people, and I started, you know, doing a lot of sponsoring. It surprised me. I would go into a meeting, and I would be whining about my work and my girlfriend and my car and all this other stuff, and this guy come up to me at the end of the meeting and say, would you be my sponsor? I said, weren't you listening to me? Yeah. But it wasn't my words. You know, the newcomer don't always hear your words. Matter of fact, he don't hear half your words. But he watches your body language, and he sees that you're calm and serene and happy, and that you've got a house and you've got a car, and these are things that he wants. You know, and so what I did then is I made a commitment. Every time I took a man through the steps, I would go through the steps again. I would do my own inventory. I would do four and five. You know, so thanks to those men, I have done these inventories over and over. I also got into a committed step study, Monday night step study on PB at the time. And I went rigorously to that for 3 years. And every 3 months, we'd go through the steps, and I would hear 20 or 30 men talk about their fourth step and their fifth step and their eighth step and their ninth step, you know. And I started to hear how people, you know, were doing the right thing, you know. I was in awe of this man. He'd been coming there for like 5 years, and we'd been there about two, and he came in and he said, you're not going to believe this. He said, I finally did my last ninth step. I said, holy shit, I got to last this long, dude. You know, he said, and it was just amazing, you know. So out of that group of 30 to 40 men that were participating for that 3 years, I still know 25 of them that are still sober. You know, that's a percentage that's rare in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know. And so, and I credit it to just doing the steps, you know, brainwashed me. You know, we used to have a lady when I first got sober, she said, you know, you guys, I come in here and I would tell them I wouldn't be involved because this is like a cult and you guys are brainwashing me. And one of the other ladies said, yeah, your brain needs washing. You know? And my brain needed washing. You know, and so I joined this group Harmony and started to get myself centered. And I remember I had gone to the Grand Canyon, and I was doing meditation. I was into all this meditation stuff. I had just taken classes, and I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and watched the sunrise, and I'm standing there freezing my ass off, and it's beautiful, and you know, it's great, and nothing, and so on the third day, I was about to turn around and walk away, and this voice that, you know, I'm like looking around, where's this voice coming from? It was coming from here. And it said, get spiritual. And that's all it said. And I came home, and I went to my meeting the next day, and the lady sitting next to me was a GSR, and she couldn't be GSR anymore. She asked someone else to be GSR. And I heard someone say, I'll do it. And I looked around, everybody was looking at me. And that started a life that I, better than I deserve. I became a GSR, and you're the person that takes care of the traditions in the meeting. One of the most important things we have here, our unity. How do we all stay together? Because we're not people that usually hang around together, or if we do, we want to fight. You know? And so I was able to do that and learn about AA and got to be, was asked, elected to be DCM, and did that, and each time I did something, it was amazing. I got to be chairman of the CPC committee, cooperation with professional community, the thing about those things, and I continued on, but the thing about those was, and I was talking about this to someone today, I would at least once every 2 weeks, or maybe even less than that, I would be standing in the parking lot somewhere, and someone would come up to me and hug me and say, "Thank you, Jim. You asked me to do this little service thing, and I didn't want to do it, but I did it, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me." And they were giving me back their spirituality that they got from that. And all I did was say, we need someone here. It's not like I was, really trying to impress anybody or do anything. It just, I knew there was a service position and need opened, and I said, do it. And this went, went on. And so I stayed on with the Area 8 and just met some wonderful people that are here to celebrate AA, to help make it work. So many newcomers come in here and don't realize that the big book just doesn't happen on that table, and that the person that reads how it works has to get that from somewhere. And that all these different things is what makes this great organization work. And so I rotated out of Area 8. And I've been doing it for about 12 years, and I can remember I left in October, and I was about to rotate out in December, and I left in October and drove out to the desert. I was trying to find where I'm supposed to go next, and what I'm supposed to do next, and I'm driving around, and I love the desert. I love Prescott and all of that anyway, but I'm trying to get this, whatever. And on the third day, I'm driving down the road, and this voice spoke to me, and it said, "Jim, it's October. Go home." And I went, "Oh, okay. I don't have to rotate till December. Why am I trying to find this out now?" But I'm a real alcoholic, and I always want to find out 3 days ahead of you what I'm supposed to do. And I did, and I came home and took the rest of the year off and got myself centered they said something in my meeting that they needed a coordinator. So I went and became a coordinator for the coordinating council in the central office. And because I already had experience as chairman of CPC, they asked me to be on the public information committee. One of the most rewarding things in the world, to go out and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous to strangers. I talk about something I love. And it just flows for some reason. And it's not always easy because the majority, when you talk to non-alcoholics, you got to tell them more of what we don't do than what we do, But that's okay. That's just part of the job, So I did that and thought everything was going along great. My life was just going. And 2008 hit. And everything turned upside down. And my little electric business that I had had already for 12 years went bankrupt. And I lost my apartment. And my best idea was, I'm going to go live in my pickup truck. Well, peeing in a pickup truck is not fun. Sleeping in a pickup truck is not fun. I lasted 3 days in the back of the pickup truck. And I had to finally realize it. So I turned myself into the Vietnam Veterans Homeless Tent, with 18 years sobriety. And I can remember sitting on that top bunk thinking, this is where you are at 18 years? But instead, what happened to me was the following day, they said they were going to have an AA meeting in that tent. And I realized, this is while I personally feel like shit, This is a way I can give back to these people and show them what a person that's sober and living a moral and principled life can be like. I don't have to, you know, do that. And so I made it through it. It was pretty bad. Four of my good friends committed suicide in 2008. So to those, to the people that it didn't affect, that's fine. But to the people that it did affect, it turned the world upside down. You know? And my home group, you know, my home group came and picked me up because we meet at 6:45 in the morning, and they came and picked me up and brought me to the meeting. You know, and you know, what can we, how can we help you? You know, and I, well, I can remember one of my good friends, Jim H. He came up to me and he said, "Here," and he gave me $50. And he said, "Just keep it. Just put it in your pocket. Don't worry about it." You know? And it took me about 7 months to pay him back. You know, but I did pay him back. You know? And that's the way the people in the fellowship were. They, you know, they helped me wherever they could. They didn't, you know, financially I was not a good thing because I was uncomfortable with that. But they did everything else. You know, and I you know, like, as you can see, I recovered from that. I went down and filed for my Social Security. I was already 63, like an idiot. I could have filed prior to that, but I filed for my Social Security, and I moved into a nice place downtown and got myself stabilized. And as soon as I got myself stabilized, I got a phone call from central office, and they said, "We haven't seen you for a while, Jim, and we could use a little help. We're having a problem with the PI committee. Would you join the PI committee?" And I said, okay. So I went down and joined the Public Information Committee again and helped them out. And at the end of the year, they elected me chair of the Public Information. So I stuck around again and for another year. And at the end of that year, they said, how would you like to be, you know, would you like to stand for chairman of the Coordinating Council? And I got elected to Coordinating Council. And each time I do this, you know, I'm able to fulfill all of the things that I want to do. It seems like Bill Wilson called it the byproduct of good living. I never knew what the byproduct of good living was because I wasn't living good. Yeah. It wasn't until I did a good first step that I understood what living a moral life was. You know? What I learned from reading the big book in the 12 and 12 is principles. I have morals and principles now. And because of that, I get the byproduct of good living, you know, and I get rewarded just with, you know, stuff. And one of the big things that's happened to me lately is that wife that I left because of guilt in has come back into my life, and we've started a relationship. And we've started a relationship. It was funny because when we first got together, the first thing I wanted to do was do a 9-step with her. And when I finished with the 9 steps, she looked at me and she says, "You know, I've got to tell you this." And she did it. So she's not an alcoholic, but she did a 9-step with me back. You know, and I realized, ooh, this is a give and take. This is someone that I can start to have a relationship with. You know, and we've started a relationship, and it's going well. Both of us are living principled lives, and it's a lot easier, you know, and a lot of fun. I haven't had this kind of fun in a long time. And so, you know, but once again, at the end of this year, I'm rotating out, and now I've pretty much run out of jobs. You know? So, but thankfully, the business committee at the Coordinating Council took pity on me and said they want me back for one more year. So I'll be on the business committee with the central office, you know. And it's just, I get to meet a wonderful group of people, and I get to be involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, and I get a chance to speak occasionally. But if nothing else, you know, one of the things that I tell people and that I had to learn, that while what I was doing while I'm doing this service is important, the most important thing that I am getting is to be a better member of my home group. See, all these lessons that I'm learning in service, I can then bring back to my home group. And if you've ever been to a business meeting at a home group, wow, very, very interesting. A lot of personalities. You know? And everybody believes they're right. You know? And I can help bring some serenity, some understanding, some yelling, you know. But I can take these things that I learned there, because that's the important thing of service. If you become a GSR and then you rotate out, that's fine. What you bring back to your home group then is 2 years of understanding the traditions and the concepts. And so when things come up in your home group, you can help the home group be a better home group. In the long run, the home group is the most important thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are an upside-down triangle. You know, the top people, they're needed. They do excellent, wonderful job. You know, they put in hours that for no pay. You know, if you've never been to some of these things where our Class A trustees are there, you really are missing something. These people are non-alcoholics. They give a minimum of 6 years of their life at no pay to Alcoholics Anonymous to make us a better thing. And they do. They bring in ideas, that concepts that we don't have. Not so much in the United States, but in the rest of the world. They go on TV. They go on radio. They're not alcoholics. They can have a face. But they bring our attitudes, our principles. They talk about our things. You know. And to meet some of these people is awe-inspiring. You know, and our Class B trustees, you know, who are alcoholics, who, you know, have egos and have feelings and everything that we are, put all these things aside for the betterment of Alcoholics Anonymous and us. You know, but they don't get their ideas from up there; they get them from right here. They get them from down here. One of the things that I was most proud of when I was doing general service, that a majority of topics at the general service conference came from Southern California. Southern California is where ideas of progressive, of doing better with AA, you know, making it. Our fellowship, the book, everything had not changed, but the AA has changed. You know, the fastest growing population in AA is me. That ain't good. You know, 55 years or older. You know. It's the only group that we've put out 3 pamphlets in, like, 5 years, you know, to help the older alcoholic, because so many people are retiring from work and, you know, going home and buying a jug and don't even realize that they're drinking themselves to alcoholism, you know. And so the outreach to the seniors is a real big thing, you know. And just like, you know, the United States, AA is getting gray. You know, one of the last statistics that I just read in the general service thing is the people with the largest percentage of people in Alcoholics Anonymous now have over 20 years. It used to be the, you know, the newer people were the ones that were the biggest percentage. You know, 6 months to a year used to be. Now it's 20 years, you know. And I noticed that at my home group, because we don't have so many middle people, and the old-timers have been, you know, I just finished being coffee maker. I'm always proud to be a coffee maker. That's the most important job in Alcoholics Anonymous as far as I'm concerned, you know. But a lot of the people that have done 20 years, they're tired of being coffee makers. They've been there. They've done that, you know. And so somehow we have to reinvigorate this whole fellowship. Because, you know, we have to have coffee makers. We have to have secretaries. And what amazes me most in this fellowship is that when I come to you and I tell you these things and I ask you, the next thing I know, there's a line out the door willing to help. You know, I went to round up in Mission Valley a couple of months ago, LBGT, and they asked me to speak, and I was very proud to speak. And one of the things that was going on was we needed some help for some activity, I can't think of it right now, at Central Office. And so while I was there, I said, You know, we need some people to do this. Oh, it was the AA's birthday, June 10th. And we were having our big gathering, our barbecue. And so I asked, and at the end of the meeting, when as I was walking out, six people came up to me and said, "We'd love to help." Every time I've come to the fellowship, when we need it, all one of the things that I find is most people don't do it simply because they don't know, you know. And when you ask them to help, they just step right up, and I mean that just really makes me want to do more, you know, and wanting me to participate and be involved, you know, and you know it's groups like yours that help do this, you know, it's you, each individual that makes this thing work, you know, and you give up your time and you put money in the basket to help because this is a business. You know, and we have to pay to keep the doors open, and you know, it's just a wonderful thing. So, and you know, as I said, my life has had its ups and downs. It has not always been easy. And in 1994, my mother called me up and asked me to come home and take care of my younger brother who was passing away from AIDS. And so in 94, I went home and took care of him. And for 8 months, I stayed there with him until he passed away. And I left there, and I came back home, and I was home, and I was starting to get my business together and everything. And I got a call from my mother, and my mother says, "I just come from a doctor, and they gave me 6 months to live. Would you come back?" And I said, "Of course I'd come back." And so I came back, and it didn't work out so well this time. You know, I tried to put myself in the same position I thought that I was in with my brother Anthony, but I just wasn't making it. And one day I was driving, going to a meeting because I had found this meeting that I had been to before, and I had, and as I was going over the overpass, I got this thought: why don't you drive the car off the overpass and just kill yourself? And so I went to the meeting, and I was quiet, and one of the guys that I got to know came up to me, and he says, "You know, how you doing?" I said, And he said, "No, how you doing?" And I said, "Well, I don't usually do this, but I just thought about suicide." And he said, "Okay." He said, "You know what?" He said, "You stick around with me for a couple of days." And he got a couple of his other buddies, and we hung out together. They came and got me at night and took me out to dinner and, you know, made sure my mom was safe and hung around. And that went on for about 3 days. And finally, the guy came up to me, and he said, "How you doing now?" And I said, "Oh, man, I think, thank you." And he said, "You know what the matter is?" And I said, "What?" He said, "It's not about you." He said, "You're trying to make your mother's death about you. You don't know how to handle it. So you want to internalize it, you know. And it's not about you. It's about her. Get back to what you were doing. Go back, you know." And I needed that awakening, you know. It's what the fellowship does, you know. And so I was able to be there for my mom. And, you know, I had been finally the son that she always wanted and the son that I always wanted to be. You know, and I was able to bury my mother and then come back here and start another life. And, you know, my business did well, and everything was going good until 2008, you know. So, you know, life's in session, you know. But it doesn't mean that just because, you know, it's rocky doesn't mean that I have to take a drink, you know. If you save some reason to take a drink, you know, your child dies, your mother dies, you know, you lose her, you get a hangnail, that will happen. That situation, I've watched it so many times in Alcoholics Anonymous. People come in and they have a reservation, you know. That's what it talks about in, again, chapter 3. You know, you've got to admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. You can never drink again. There is no hangnail bad enough. You know, she's going to leave you anyway. You know, it just, you know, it just is living life on life's terms, you know. But you don't have to drink. You have to draw a line in the sand, and it's very hard. But you have to draw that line in the sand no matter what. I'm not going to drink. Yeah. And I'm saying this to the people that know this, to the people that do this. Yeah. But as I've found for myself, I need someone to remind me of the basics and the basics and the basics. Like I said, I did that step study over and over and over ad nauseum. But because I did that, I haven't had to change my sobriety date. And it's not easy, but it's doable. Look to the person to your left and the person to your right. It's doable. And it doesn't make a difference if you're hearing impaired, you're in a wheelchair. This fellowship has available to you to get to meetings. We will do it. We have committees that do nothing but help people with any kind of problem. One of the things that I was most pissed about when I tell you that when I went back to the coordinating council, they said, well, you've got this experience with the CPC, so why don't you go on a PI? And I said, no, I want to be on a program committee. And they said, why do you want to be on a program committee? I said, because they throw parties. Who doesn't want to throw a party? And they said, nah, you're better over here. So I'm still waiting to throw a party, but maybe one of these days. But that is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. It's always the highlight of my life to come and talk about something that I love so much. Thank you.